Hey there, welcome to the Locked On Cavs podcast. I'm Chris Manning with my co-host Evan Damerl. On today's show, we're talking about Evan Mobley not winning Rookie of the Year, starting our Darius Garland week by talking about how good Darius Garland was, asking two questions about it. Number one, what impressed us the most? And number two, what surprised us about Darius Garland's ascendant season? That's all coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, the music you heard in on the way in, if you're listening on audio form, is from Astro Radio. Check them out on Apple Music or Spotify. Today's episode is also brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season and all seasons with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. That's Bet Online. That's where the game starts. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs and the NBA at large for Diamond Up Rocks, Through the Sword, and other places. My co-host, Evan Damerl, is the lead honcho, just taking his axe, climbing up a wood wall, and storming a village over at Facebook's Raytown Euclid. What's going on, buddy? How are you?
That's a Northman reference. Not too bad, man. I had an eventful weekend. I got a new phone. Those are expensive.
Listen to the pod so Evan can afford his phone. Thank you.
No, the guy at Verizon did made a good point because I had to keep it on like on my monthly bill. I just wanted to pay it off there. But he's like, you don't get the $700 off if you do that. He's like, the most you can pay is $350, so your phone payments are 60 cents a month. And I'm like, shut that guy.
Okay.
I saw Fantastic Beasts, which is one of the worst movies I think I've ever seen. Actually, after I've had 24 hours to reflect on it. I got to use the restroom about a half hour in, and I was like curious, and I looked up how long the movie was, and I went back to my girlfriend. I'm like, we're only 2 hours into this movie, and she's like, stop it, I'm liking it. But anyways, other than that, then I enjoyed the weather. But do you have a good weekend?
I saw the Northman. I'm doing great.
Did you go with your pop? Doing great.
I did. My dad, not as into it as me, but you know what? That's not surprising. That's really not surprising.
Your dad looks like he has the kind of scrapper he could be capable of pulling off some of those stunts, like climbing a wall with an axe in his teeth. If I keep talking crap about your mom, just one night I'm going to hear like the windows shatter in my apartment, and I just see censored Manning standing in my living room with an axe in his mouth and the moonlight shining on him. And then Chris just going, yeah, fucking yeah, from the alley.
Man. Love the Northman. We'll be seeing that movie again. We'll be watching.
I'm excited to see it.
Yeah. Losing my mind.
I mess with the Hamlet-like story all the time. It's a classic for a reason.
Shout out to my guy Josh Link, listener of the pod, friend of the pod, for indulging me in lots of takes and texts about that movie over the weekend. Shout out to my guy. All right, anyway, let's talk first about Evan Mobley, Rookie of the Year. Doesn't win the award. Scotty Barnes from the Toronto Raptors ends up winning the award. Evan, I just want to ask, when you see this come through, I think it gets first reported, then it gets announced. I guess, what did you think of this? Were you surprised? Do you feel strongly about it one way or the other? Where do you fall on this?
Well, I found out through the NBA press release when I was looking at a house. So that was my own fault. But
here's the thing. The stuff doesn't matter enough to put your life on hold. So there's that.
I know that's one of it. But I looked down at it. And my girlfriend just seems like, "What's up?" I'm like, "Oh wow, Evan Mobley didn't win Rookie of the Year." Anyways, what's up? How old is the ventilation system? When did you recently update the HVAC? So that's just kind of where I'm at. I'm not necessarily surprised that Scotty Barnes won. I see people like screaming recency bias. I don't really think that accounts into it. I think it's tricky because people always ask me like, well, what's Mobley's case over Cade Cunningham? I'm like, well, Mobley helped the team to a winning record. Scotty Barnes was also part of a winning team, a team with a winning record. He may not have been was a key component like Mobley was for the Cavs, but was extremely beneficial to what Toronto is trying to do this year. So I'm not surprised necessarily. Disappointed, maybe as just a fan of Evan Mobley's game and just someone who has watched all 82 games of his this season.
Well, he didn't play 82 games.
Every game he was in this season over the 82 game span for the or 84 game span for the Cavs. I thought he was phenomenal, and I just think this is no discount or discredit to his God-given ability as a basketball player. Like, he's still going to be good, guys. Just because he doesn't have a piece of hardware to signify that he was the top rookie his rookie season still doesn't mean he's going to not have an NBA career or anything. Like, he's going to be great.
Yeah. Like, I think if it came down to it, and I had a vote, and I don't, and I think...
Only 100 people do.
I mean, that's fine. I don't really...
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, people are like, well, why didn't you guys vote for him? Like, only 100 journalists get to the... It's a 100-person ballot. That's all
yeah.
it is.
Yeah. I think Evan Mobley, if I had a vote, would have been my pick. I think if you look at what he did, and you look at how much, I think, responsibility he carried, and the reason that he elevated this organization in a lot of ways, I think he's one of the driving factors of the turnaround in a way that Scottie obviously helped, but I think he accentuated what was there. That is my argument. I think there will be, like, I think it's very possible that we look back at this in, like, 5 years and are like, how the hell did he not win Rookie of the Year with some historical hindsight? But, like, I also...
Same could be said for Scottie as well. That's
well, we I mean, it could, day, be said, but... it could be said for Cade. Like, Cade, yeah, like, Cade's really good. Like, this is a really good rookie class. And the betting lines, like, I think the public voting disclosures that we saw, I think we saw that this is going to be a pretty close race. I think mm-hmm. Mobley... It doesn't take away from Mobley's spectacular season. It doesn't take away from the fact
precisely. That, like... It was the closest Rookie of the Year race ever, for what it's worth.
Yeah, worth. I mean, like,
it was a very narrow victory for Scottie Barnes.
And, like, it's, like, legitimately a competitive one, not, like, a Brogdon Embiid situation, right? Like, these are... This is a situation... Or like, Mike
Mitchell.
This is, like, a year where Michael Carter-Williams wins Rookie of the Year. These are guys that are potentially going to be Hall of Fame players, all-star-level players, star high-end players. What?
Michael Carter-Williams had an incredible rookie debut against the championship-winning Heat. He didn't. I thought. Are you saying he's okay. gonna have a Hall of Fame career?
No, I'm. No. You're misunderstanding what I'm saying. I'm saying Michael Carter Williams won Rookie of the Year. Evan Mobley, Scottie Barnes, Cade Cunningham. These are guys that could be like all NBA guys that have the chance to be MVPs of this league. That have the chance to be defining players of their generation in a lot of ways. That's not. MCW's had a fun career. That's not what he ended up being. But he won Rookie of the Year. I also would think if you're looking at this and you're like really mad about this, like here's the thing. This like ultimately, like I get if you're a big Cavs fan, you're upset about this, all that stuff. Number one, you still get to root for the team that has him, okay? And he's really
like,
freaking good.
It's not like Evan Mobley suddenly isn't a Cavalier anymore because of this.
And number two, like this isn't like the thing that I think creating some distance and some so the lack of like getting so worked up about some of this stuff is just it's not to me. It's not ultimately worth it to get really really aggro about some of this stuff. I get that you're like.
It's not
if you're passionate about it, I think that's good.
A weekend is beautiful. This mad online about Evan Mobley winning a trophy and Scottie Barnes winning it over him. Like, that's just, it's just silly.
Like, have fun with it. People, I'm sure, will make signs next year at games. It'll create a fun environment. There could be a fun rivalry. Like, this is not that deep. This is not a thing that you should, like, define your whole, like, Cavs fandom over, in my mind.
No, not at all. Like, I absolutely agree with you. Like, it's easy as that. Try to think of like a historical example off the top of my head of like who won Rookie of the Year over somebody else but still had a pretty great career overall. Were Magic and Larry rookies at the same time or no?
Yeah,
they were. So Larry won it's Rookie like the of the Year over Magic that year. That's like the
That's like the famous rookie class.
Larry was technically drafted the year before by Boston.
But he didn't.
Away.
No, he didn't.
Remember that part. So that's just think of it that way. Like, it's two great players who were deserving to win, but the voters agreed that it was one player they felt was maybe more great in this moment right now. Doesn't quantify where either career is going to go. It's silly to get, like, obsessive shoot over this.
How do you feel about... I want to end on this, just this point. How do you feel like if you were considering voting and we're considering voting on these awards, like in a conceptual way, how do you feel like winning should factor into that? Like the actual win-loss record of the teams that these guys are playing for?
I mean, it's tough
because this year's a weird case for that in a lot of ways because Evan Mobley was the third pick on a bad team and then that team made a real play-in run. And then...
I mean, probably a few baskets away from.
Yeah, like things break differently. Like that's Scottie Barnes was a piece on a team that wasn't one of the top six teams in the East this year. Like they had turnarounds with those guys that Cade obviously did and stuff like that. So like, how do you feel about winning as part of the formula of deciding these awards?
Oh no, I agree with it. I think if it was just like Evan Mobley versus Cade Cunningham, you can make a more compelling argument because I obviously know that like. some voters might, but most voters aren't going to use like the Vegas metrics to say like, oh, Cleveland is expected to win 26.5. Toronto is expected to kind of be this good. Maybe Evan Mobley's impact was more significant than Scotty Barnes. Like, yeah, you can make that argument if you're like a diehard fan, but I think if you're a voter, you don't take that into consideration. And I also do wonder if how much film, like if a beat writer voted for Evan Mobley, like Chris Fedor is the Cavs beat writer, I believe, who had a vote, and he voted for Evan Mobley over Scotty Barnes. But let's say somebody who doesn't watch every single game he plays with the Cavs and only catches him on an off night chance or something like that because they're a beat writer for Toronto or maybe a beat writer who wrote it for Scotty Barnes. Like maybe they just look at the box score, they look at the statistics, they look at the output over the maybe the post All-Star break numbers as well. And notice maybe Scotty Barnes has more compelling argument there. It's tricky, but that's just kind of how I break it down in my mind.
Yeah, I don't have particularly, I think winning is like, it should factor. It's like a tiebreaker kind of thing in my mind.
Yeah, I just think it's hard because you are also, you're expecting humans to make the decision you hope everyone else agrees with. But that's the beauty of it, maybe, is people have an equal voice. So it's not just like three people in Cleveland voted for Evan Mobley and that's why he should get it. Like, we're going to hear the outcry here because this is our ethos and our sphere. But I'm sure if you like talked to maybe one of the other Locked On hosts, like, oh no, I think Mobley or Barnes is better. Somebody's going to say Mobley's better. And again, it's silly to get caught up on this. They're both really talented and it's going to be fascinating to see where both their respective careers go.
Yes. All right. After the break, we're going to talk about Darius Garland and what most impressed us about his season, his ascension as a key piece of the Cleveland Cavaliers. But Evan, you're first going to tell everyone about Athletic Greens.
You're absolutely correct. Today's episode of Locked On Cavs is brought to you by Athletic Greens, a product I actually use literally every day. I started taking Athletic Greens about a month and a half ago, and it was because I wanted to take control of my health. With one delicious scoop of AG, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help start your day right. It's a special blend of ingredients that supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. It has everything you need and then some. It's lifestyle friendly, whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, you're dairy-free, or gluten-free, and it contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, and no nasty chemicals or artificial anything, all while still tasting good. It also supports better sleep quality and recovery, mental clarity, and alertness. It costs you less than $3 a day, and if you're investing in your health, it's cheaper than your cold brew habit. It's cheaper than getting all the different supplements for yourself. You're investing in an all-in-one nutritional insurance entrusted by leading health experts such as Tim Ferriss and Michael Gervais. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/NBA Network. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/NBA Network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
All right, back here on the Locked On Cavs podcast, I'm Chris. That's Evan. Evan, I want to ask you an open-ended question. As we're going to do it, as we've talked about it last week on the show, just as a refresher now, this is going to be a really Darius Garland focused week. Today's show is going to be kind of what impressed us and all of that. Tomorrow's going to be a stat dive. And then we're going to talk about what's to come with Darius. As we're going to go through this with some of the bigger name players in the team, but starting with Darius, to me, felt appropriate. So I want to ask you, open-ended, what most impressed you about what we saw from Darius Garland in his third NBA season?
Oh, boy, that's that is an open question, but it is kind of hard to answer because there are a lot of things that were impressive about him this year. I think if you just really just put in perspective that a lot of people, you and myself included and many others, expected a third-year leap from Darius. I think what impressed me most is he hit a level that none of us expected. Like, he hit on, like, the, I don't want to say the 99th percentile because it feels like you're limiting him even that way. Maybe the 95th percentile of his outcomes, like, which is awesome, but what really impressed me most towards the end of the season was his ability to elevate people on the floor and make them better and put the Cavs in winning positions more often than not. There were nights that were blown out. There were nights they lost close ones. But if Darius was a constant force and a constant factor, he kept the Cavs competitive until maybe just things grew out of his control because there's only so much he can do 3 years into the league.
Yeah, I look at this on that note. I think it's a guy that did elevate people. You know, his assist percentage went up 9% in year 3 from 30.9 in year 2 to 39.9 in year three. That's more than double what he was as a rookie at age 20. His has gone from 20% in year one, basically 21% in year one, 25% in year two, to 28% in year three. This is a guy that has continually added more and more. And this year we saw him basically have to be the center of the Cavs' offensive gravity, right? Like, the Cavs' offense at times like didn't function particularly well. Like, it obviously didn't look particularly great down the end of the season. It obviously didn't, you know, I think execute in the way they would have liked in terms of getting to the playoffs. But like, I don't put that on Darius in any way. Darius was the reason that it functioned a lot of the time. This is a guy that played a ton of minutes, had the ball in his hands a ton, especially as the season wore on and more guys got hurt and things. The infrastructure kind of crumbled around him a little bit. Like, this Cavs team just wouldn't have worked without him. And I you could have told me that he was going to have a great year, that he was going to be an All-Star candidate and make the All-Star team, all of that stuff. I don't necessarily know if I would have looked at him and said, okay, this is a guy that is going to become this good and carry this big of a load,
yeah,
and handle it well as the season goes on and he has to do more and more and more and more and more.
Yeah, man, it's really interesting to think. Because Kobe Altman said with me during his media availability, his exit interview, and I kind of rolled my eyes at it when I asked him if he was surprised from this three-year leap, but he said he wasn't surprised because he's watched all of Darius's games since high school, which I guess I believe because you do your due diligence on a lot of these prospects before you draft them, clearly. But the Cavs hit on this one. They have their franchise guard, and I don't know if we'll see this nuclear level of ascension again next year. His body just may give out, or he may just be gassed and tired at that point, but I feel comfortable in saying the Cavs have their franchise guard and they have cornerstones to go with him, and that's really refreshing to hear, especially considering like how dire the situation seemed when you had George Hill trotting out as the point guard and then you were trying like Dante Exum a little bit as well just before you were able to draft Darius, and even then you were still a little uncertain on what he could be. Is he DJ Augustine or is he more than that kind of situation?
Yeah, this is I think this year kind of showed that he completed a transformation of what he is as a player. He definitely was kind of a shoot first player as a rookie, and then as time went on, definitely elevated, definitely became like an offensive hub. Now, I think the question going forward is how do you best support him? I don't think it's wise, obviously, to ask him to continually do this much. Cavs were like a good offensive team, right? Like, it's not like the Cavs were like a top five offense with Darius doing this, and he like elevated the personnel to such a degree that like it takes away some of the other issues you have. But it like made the, like, just especially considering the injuries, especially in the context of the amount of injuries they had, that almost made like more impressive team that they could, had just enough offense considering like, they play a pretty conservative offensive style. And then, like, you're not getting much from Okor on offense. You're not getting much from Stevens. You know, you're not, like, Markkanen was kind of hit or miss at times. For the year, you know, they finished with the 19th best offense. It's not good. It was below league average by, like, half a point per 100 possessions. But, like, it is so much worse if Darius Garland, like, ultimately is not playing. And, like, there's a gap between them, yeah, and like, where they need to get to if they want to be really competitive going forward. But, like, he made a lot of the offense functional enough to get them to the end of the year, I think.
Yeah, he absolutely did. And if you're listening to this on audio or watching on YouTube, make sure you subscribe because this is going to be an exciting week talking about Darius, because he was, other than Evan Mobley, just doing freaky Evan Mobley shit, like, it was the most exciting. Darius Garland was the most exciting player on a night-to-night basis for the Cavs. Like, he made games enjoyable, even if they looked like they were going to get their shit pushed in. Like, he somehow kept them competitive. And like Chris said, that's just testament to his ability. Not sustainable on the Cavs' part, and that should be a key focus this offseason. Something we'll definitely be breaking down the line. But fun year. And I'm glad you and I were on the right side of history when it came to the Sexland Wars.
Look, no war is good. War is bad. I'm all about peace.
After Chris still has his finger. Chris never got cut off his fingers. They're still there.
Yeah, these are robotic. All right, after the break, we're going to go to something we hit a little bit on, but what surprised us about Darius Garland season the most, and anything that perhaps leaves us a little bit cold about the year in some ways. That's going to be coming after the break, but first, I'm going to tell everyone about our friends at Built Bar. Built Bar is the best-tasting protein bar on the market, and they're going to help you continue to stick to your New Year's resolutions because, you know, may have given up by now, but they can help you pushing on and pushing through and being your best self. Built Bars are covered in 100% real chocolate. Yes, 100% real chocolate. That includes their puffs. And go check out their macros chart on Built.com. You're going to be blown away. They are high protein, low calorie, high fiber, and low carb. Most Built Bars contain 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 grams of net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. Compare that to a candy bar, which usually has around 240 calories, 30 grams of sugar, and dozens of net carbs. And they're all their flavors are great. They have new flavors coming out all the time. And if they think a flavor might be good, they're going to make it with flavors like mint brownie, coconut, cookies and cream, peanut butter. You can't really go wrong at Built. So go to Built.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and get 15% off your order. Again, use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, last segment, Chris Manning, Evan Damrell here on the Lockdown Cavs podcast. Evan, as far as Darius's season, the surprising factor of it. Did anything that happened in terms of how we look back at it now, you think about it, is there something about it that surprised you in terms of what it was?
I mean, other than what we talked about in the last segment, not necessarily. I think just like him having this kind of season overall is surprising because I keep saying this, I'm sure if you're a regular listener, you notice this, but we expected a leap from Darius Garland. I just said it last segment, in fact, but we didn't expect this type of leap, and it's exciting to think where his actual like potential rounds out. Like, is he more of like a Nick the Quick type player where he has like an all-star caliber year, but he ends up being a solid guard overall? Or does he have like another level or two to his game and to his craft and to his ability to kind of get him into like maybe some of the other players he was kind of putting the nebulous of in terms of just game of like, not saying Steph or Dame because that's unfair, but like a player who could be in that conversation where you're like, okay, if I'm starting a franchise tomorrow, I'm going to grab Darius Garland to build around. Like, that's maybe he enters that conversation, and that's kind of what the gears are turning on now and maybe what I'm pondering and just waiting to maybe see what happens next year with him.
Yeah, I'm going to say that my answer to this question is a little bit of a tease for the statue, so I'm not going to say it here, but there's an on-off thing that is very drastic and very telling of, I think, how much he juiced the offense this year, which is a thing we'll see where, you know, it kind of leads to with and how they can best support them going forward. I think if there's anything, Evan, that leaves me like a little bit underwhelmed, and it's not even about him, it's just that it feels like there's still, I think, a part of Darius that is really useful playing off ball, spotting up from threes, coming off of screens to kind of get him some easier looks and kind of maximize some of the spacing he provides. I don't think we saw enough of that because the roster at the end of the year doesn't support that. That is like I wonder if you get a Cavs season where like they don't need to be healthy 100% of the year, but if they can have enough functionality and have that like 75% of the year, 80% of the year, you know, is he more efficient in some ways? Like, how does that impact him and what we saw from him? Like, how does that yin and yang kind of work? I would like to see that. And to me, if they can get that, if Mobley can develop as a creator, if Sexton is back next year, all that stuff, if LeVert, you know, is back and has that level of impact that you know, Kobe kind of hit at last week and all of that, and that I think to some degree you're hoping that it can provide you, how that looks to me would be pretty interesting. That's the one thing where I leave kind of just like a little bit with that box is not checked off in terms of how I think I should think about it right now.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair assessment. I think it's interesting for Kobe to say that the team won't really hire an offensive head, like an assistant coach that assists JV Bickerstaff and just making things maybe a little more
efficient. Can I ask about that real quick?
I was going to say, but why he wasn't going to, but go ahead.
Okay, no, so did someone ask him directly about that?
Yeah, okay. Marla Ridenour of the Akron Beacon Journal said, are there any plans to bring in an offensive-minded assistant? And Kobe quipped back saying, what is their problem with our offense? And he said, when we're fully healthy, we crush teams. And that's when Dave Zabak asked for proof, and then I provided the clip. He's like, wow, you never hear a general manager say they're actually crushing their opponents, but the reason Kobe won't hire or says the team doesn't need like an offensive coordinator, like Chris and I are really calling for it when they hired Sidney Lowe instead, who's more of a player development coach at this point, just general vibes master. But Altman's thesis and just the main crux is that when the team is fully healthy, that means Colin Sexton included. That means Jared Allen, obviously. That means a fully functional Evan Mobley. That means a fully functional Larry Markkanen and everybody across the board. And also, what they bring in, because he said they're going to prioritize shooting, size, and athleticism. Like, you can kind of see the vision a little bit, but I do wonder what we're going to get from Darius Garland, because I think about Ricky Rubio a lot too, where Rubio's like, you had a great season last year. What do we do to make it even better than last season? Like, what are you going to do to respond, to show maybe some new avenues of your game? Maybe efficient, being hyper-efficient in terms of just shooting and passing will be his new bag, and he kind of just continues to elevate his teammates, and now that he has healthier personnel around him, the wins just come a little easier, and it's a little more harmonious on offense. Like, there are avenues, like you said, for this to become easier for him. But I still think firmly that the top priority is finding him a veteran to back him up, or you maybe invest in draft capital and get one of the top point guards in this draft that you can bring along slowly but play 16 to 20 minutes a night. And then maybe in the back-to-back scenario, you rest Darius and play this rookie point guard. Of course, if you feel like they're comfortable enough, we'll do a tankathon sim before the show ends, but that's the next step for me. Like, how are you going to support this guy so that he can continue to build upon his success? Because the thing that just kind of gave me pause was injuries still had an impact on putting a damper on some moments in Dick Garland's season. It was mostly the back, obviously, but there's just a mix of things. Like, it was the knee, it was the ankle, it was a lot of things. It was COVID. It was just a lot of different issues going on at once, where that's just concerning. I think it's, I'm not going to say he's injury prone, because they're all freak accident injuries, and I don't know if his sophomore season he was truly injured, or if the Cavs are shamelessly tanking to get a better draft pick. Who knows? You'll never get a straight answer out of that, and I don't think any team would ever admit they were trying to lose intentionally. But Garland still has some injury issues, and he didn't lose that frailty tag because of it this year. So
yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah,
the thing. Like, injuries just kind of put a damper on the overall, like, exciting package this was, where maybe it's like a Christmas present, but some of the paper's already been torn away, so you're teased a little bit, but you don't get to unpack the whole surprise yourself, because you don't get the whole experience. Or maybe it's just like, you buy the Megazord pieces individually as a kid, your parents did, and you don't get the Tyrannosaurus Rex, so you just have the ligaments instead and the pterodactyl. So that's just kind of where you're at.
Didn't expect
Chris to doesn't get that reference, because he doesn't watch Power Rangers, or didn't watch Power Rangers.
I did, not a ton.
Okay, cool. Like, I was a Power Rangers in Space guy, to be specific, because like every child of the 90s, I enjoyed Space.
Yeah. Just a note, Darius did play a career high number of games this year, 68, 30, almost 36 minutes a game.
That's big.
Career high minutes. I think he held up pretty good considering the back stuff. It's just like, if you can get up to 72 games next year, 74, 75.
72 like, games on realistic minutes, but also he's fully functional and healthy and not gassed.
Yeah, by the end of the season. It was just it was like that ankle thing at the beginning of the year. Just like, well, obviously you want to get him into the year where he's not exhausted when you need him the most. Is the thing?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing I think I'm trying to get at too. Is I didn't even mention it though. Is just having that competent backup also keeps him from getting gassed. Maybe when the games matter even more and things are a lot tighter for the Cavs. Mm-hmm. And that's part of growing up and winning, obviously, but I think prioritizing and finding like a proper backup for him should be a big, big, big step for the Cavs this offseason.
All right.
Like, so Caris LeVert's good, but I don't want him, if I'm the Cavs, I don't want him backing up Darius Garland on a night to night basis.
The guy
good
that
enough
I,
in certain scenarios.
I mean, I don't know what he's going to cost, but DeLon Wright would be so good.
DeLon Wright would be so good. I think he's going to be priced out of the Cavs. So
yeah, I just don't know what teams have money. And like Atlanta also like has luxury tax concerns. I was texting with Brad Rowland about this, and he's just like, he could probably stay in Atlanta, but is Atlanta going to pay the luxury tax is sort of the question there. Okay, let's end on Tankathon. We're each going to do a spin and call it a day. Evan, no finagling is to get to guarantee top four pick. Just what it is what it is. So I'm going to hit mine, and then I'll tell you what it
I
is.
I got mine.
All right, you go. What do you got?
Here's the top five. Chet Holmgren, 1. Jabari Smith, 2, to Sacramento. Chet Holmgren's going to Detroit at 1. Jabari Smith, number 2, to Sacramento. Paolo Banchero, 3, to Houston. Jaden Ivey, 4, to OKC. Keegan Murray, number 5, to Orlando. And Cleveland is all the way down at 14, picking Dyson Daniels.
Yeah, I got the Cavs at 14 as well. Top 6 here, top 5 here, Sacramento,
well,
Houston,
the Cavs
Portland,
can only
Orlando,
be 14
Detroit.
Earn in the top 4, folks. Yes. Like, those are the only possibilities they have, and they have a less than 1% chance of a top 4 pick at any spot.
So probably they're going to pick at 14. Yes. Yep. So yeah, that's our Tankathon spin of the day. We'll be doing these in the last segment of the show, just in the next 22-ish days, the number of shows we do then, just because that's when the draft letter happens, and that should be fun on that. And maybe we'll do a live stream or something on that. That could be cool. Evan, anything you want to plug before we hit exit here?
Nothing coming to Write Down Euclid this Monday morning. I spoke with the fine folks at the Cleveland Rugby Club, and I'll be having a feature coming out on them on Tuesday. They are in the catbird seats to actually be at the national championship, and it'd be cool. It was cool to hear from them again, so that's just kind of what I'm working on. But other than that, this is 5 days a week. Subscribe to us on YouTube if you're listening to us on audio. If you're watching on YouTube, just click the button already, man. Please, I'm desperate at this point. And I hope you guys enjoyed your weekend. I got a little too much sun today, so I am tired. Chris, anything you want to plug?
No, just enjoy yourselves, be kind, and don't take rookie of year voting all that seriously. We'll talk to you tomorrow when we're diving into Darius Garland, his stats, and what the numbers, analytics, and otherwise say about his third year in the NBA, his All-Star season, his first All-Star season with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Next time, I'm Chris, that's Evan.
Peace.